Last month, Reed Turcotte, editor of the Morris Mirror, a local paper in southern Manitoba, wrote an editorial criticizing Aboriginal Canadians and the Idle No More movement. The short editorial and accompanying editorial cartoon were quickly condemned as racist by the Aboriginal community. Nigan Waywadam Sinclair, a member of the University of Manitoba's Native Studies Department, went to Morris to try to meet with Turcotte and wrote an open letter published in the Winnipeg Free Press as The Words We Have Inherited. Nigan Waywadam joins me in the studio. Welcome.
Oh, bonjour. Hello.
So you met you went to Morris to try to meet with Reed Turcotte, the editor, and I understand the editor refused to meet with you. What were you hoping to say to him if you'd had a chance to?
Well, I didn't just go specifically to meet with the editor. So that's just first thing that probably should be made clear. I also met with the mayor. I met with the principal of the school. I met with town councillors. I met with citizens. I met with local activists within the movement within Morris. But if I had met with him, I would have said exactly what I had written in the letter that was published in the Winnipeg Free Press, which talks about really three things. The first is the history of Treaty 1 territory, what a treaty is, how members of a citizen act as a part of a treaty, as responsible citizens that share a community and share territory, share resources, share families. And then I would also talk about the history of Morris and the history of Alexander Morris in the creation of that treaty, and then what we are today as inheritors of that legacy in southern Manitoba as members of Treaty 1, and to talk about a meaningful relationship that we can form together, that our children can inherit a thing of beauty and not one of name-calling, one of violence, one of separation and division, which is where these words come from. These words come from a way in which to see one another in very singular and one-dimensional ways.
Do you think in some ways there was more understanding back in the 19th century when Treaty 1 was signed, and that there's a different type of understanding then than there was now about the relationship between different communities here in southern Manitoba?
I don't know about the 19th century. I'd say probably closer to the probably the beginning of the 19th century, maybe. There was a treaty that was formed called the Selkirk Treaty in 1817, and that treaty was between Lord Selkirk and chiefs along the Red River. Even that document, while resulting in a somewhat unbalanced relationship of land sharing in southern Manitoba, still was seen amongst First Nations as a equitable document, as a document where we could create family members that would share territory and share it in such a way that it would be mutually beneficial. It would be based on things like the idea of the two-row wampum, or that we could travel this river together without interfering with one another, but yet both enjoying the benefits of the water and the benefits of land and the benefits of the air that we breathe, and that we take care of one another. We take care of one another as family. That relationship really has never been realized, unfortunately. This relationship of family that we had hoped, our ancestors on both sides had hoped, I think has never really been actually realized. And that really began in the first year of after the Selkirk Treaty, when Lord Selkirk had promised annuities, resources and funds, and never returned, paid 1 year and 1 year only. And that's a very unfortunate part of our legacy. But it has started a long chain of results that ended up in anonymous name-calling, in editorial documents, on internet websites, and really a genuine ignorance of what Idle No More, the issues around Idle No More has emerged, and people are interested in engaging. So I was interested in engaging that dialogue and really living up to the responsibility of all of us as family members with one another.
So you met with a lot of people in the town of Morris, like you said. Were you surprised with the reactions that you received? And was that what you expected, the reactions that you got from community members that you did meet with?
Well, I've been traveling to Morris for probably 20 years of my life. So I know the great people there. And I wasn't surprised at all that there were an incredible body, an incredible community of people there. I guess what I was most surprised about at all was that throughout all of the major walks of life of the people that I met, the mayor, the principal, it was the desire to want to know more, the admittance, the the admittance that they knew so little about First Nations history and territory and the very land in which they were standing on. That, for me, is sometimes a shock that the Canadian education system, that all of us have been abused, and the ways in which we've been abused is a complete erasure of who we are as a people. The way in which those of us who live in this territory, every single person should know what Treaty 1 is, what it means, and the responsibilities that all of us live with as a member of that treaty, that we are all family. We wouldn't let family members suffer the ways in which First Nations people suffer. We wouldn't let them drink unhealthy water. We wouldn't let them live in poverty. And we wouldn't let them have their resources exploited the way in which they are now. We would never treat a family member like that. And that's, unfortunately, the only thing that really surprises me is that people think that that's a natural evolution of this relationship.
So one of the phrases in Turcotte's editorial that really struck me was that he said that First Nations have unrealistic expectations of government. How realistic is it to expect government to live up to its treaty obligations?
Well, I think it's realistic to expect a government to treat human beings as human beings. And I think it's realistic to expect a government to live up to promises that they have inherited, because they have certainly benefited very deeply and greatly by treaties. And because of that benefit, I think it's equally responsible and equally fair to expect those benefits to be shared mutually. I don't think it's unrealistic whatsoever to expect members of a family to be treated like a member of that family, that they can be welcome at that table and they don't have to sit at the in the bathroom locked or in the closet locked while there's this incredible abundance of food at the kitchen table that one party is eating. I don't think that's unrealistic whatsoever.
You going down to Morris was in reaction to a particular editorial, but how different is what you saw in that editorial from a lot of the mainstream media coverage of Idle No More movement and First Nations issues generally?
Well, I've been accused at times of being a glass half full kind of person. So I would say this. I would say that it's taken 150 years to create this situation of violence and imbalance and it's taken 150 years to create a relationship where we have power and domination that creates situations like Attawapiskat. Now, in now going on 8 weeks, the change that has happened within this country in 8 weeks has dismantled so much of what has taken 150 years to build. And as a result, that has got to give us hope. And that's got to give us an incredible amount of inspiration to see that I've seen more people, more non-Indigenous people at Idle No More gatherings dancing, invited to dance and partaking in dancing, as well as being a part and being aware and being interested in First Nations issues. We're on the front page of every newspaper regularly, where we couldn't even get a mention in a debate, in leaders' debates and for Prime Minister for years and years and years. We have seen more change done by First Nations peoples and their allies than ever before in this country since the days of the White Paper, reaction to the White Paper in the 1960s, which was almost exclusively First Nation. Now it is a mixed group of people who are interested in change and dedicated to that change. I see more possibility than ever before.
In some communities, like in Thunder Bay, there's been an upsurge of racist violence as in reaction to Idle No More. How does racism in the media help fuel some of this violence that we've seen?
Well, listen, we are shaking the foundation of the narrative of Canada. The narrative of Canada is this prim, made-up story that friendship happened and there was this equitable relationship that somehow that treaties were kind of like used car sales where people bought land and never had any obligations to one another after that, and we are peacekeepers in Africa and Asia. And it's this mythical narrative that has been always embedded and deeply built off the foundation of the exploitation of First Nations people in their territories and our resources, and that these resources are not one-dimensional extraction points to send off to China, such as oil, to create a pipeline and exploit and destroy. That is the foundation in which Canada is built on, And unfortunately, we're shaking that narrative. So people don't like the boat to be shooken. And as a result, people get very upset and get very angry. And I think the media has done actually a pretty admirable job in lots of ways to cover this movement in the best way in which they can. But they, too, have ignored this history of ignorance and erasure. And that this, unfortunately, is the product of a longstanding educational system that is invested in that narrative, that is invested in the ideas that Canada is this peace-loving nation that goes out and creates peace throughout the world, but really has wrought incredible destruction and violence throughout Canada's history. And unfortunately, that's a story that we've never heard, but we are now hearing it. So naturally, people are upset, concerned, and going, why haven't I learned that? And as a result, we see people who expand or express themselves in particularly inappropriate and violent ways, because that's the history that we know. The history that we are seeing now is simply the symptom of a relationship.
And closing on maybe that half glass full approach that you talk about, what do you see as the opportunity with Idle No More in terms of opening space for dialogue between Aboriginal and settler communities here in Canada?
Well, I think the important thing to think about Idle No More is Idle No More is an important moment, but it is only a moment. And this movement has been going on for decades and decades. My grandfather made this struggle. My father was embedded in this struggle, and I am embedded in this struggle. And women have been at the struggle for centuries, Indigenous women. This moment is pivotal to think about, but I see the change that's happened in recently as being really the product of all of that work coming to fruition. It's been a long century and a half of this country, and that the culmination point that is now has been the work of many, many years. And what's really idle is that violent, imbalanced, inappropriate relationship that the treaties have unfortunately been viewed as. And so the actual vision of what those treaties could actually look like is what we're really trying to push. The Idle No More movement is trying to push towards to make an actual living, breathing, life-filling relationship for all of us.
Well, thanks for speaking with us about it, Nigan.
Miigwech, thank you.
Nigan Wewadam Sinclair is from the Little Peguis First Nation in Manitoba and a member of the Department of Native Studies at the University of Manitoba. He's the author of numerous works of fiction and nonfiction, including the anthology Manitopwepo, for which he recently won the 2012 On the Same Page competition.